Hello, everyone. Adam here. As you can probably tell by the title, this is part two of my interview with Delegate Eric Zaire. So make sure you check out part one first before you watch or listen to this one, so it makes a lot more sense. All that said, to set up the question, do you like the idea of Virginia becoming a split electoral vote state? Right now, there's a couple swing districts, but for the most part, you can generally count on Virginia, 11 congressional districts, 6 of them will go blue generally, 4 to 5 will go red, which would split our electoral votes. What do you think about that?
You know, initially that sounds great because, of course, I'm lamenting the fact that Virginia is turning blue, and I'd like to see the voices of those of us in these redder districts to be counted at the electoral level. I'd have to think that all the way through, and I'm sure there's a reason that it was, you know, the founders knew what they were doing and why they set it up that way. But it is lamentable when you look at the geography of Virginia and you overlay the blue districts with the red districts, you'd think the entire state is red. It's just the population is so concentrated over there in northern Virginia and on the eastern coast. Yeah. But
that's why you can, too, it's so much easier for them to campaign up there, too, because in a red district, even if the population is somewhat comparable, however you want to say it, let's say there's 3 million in the rest of Virginia and 3 million in Nova. It is an urban area. So, I mean, you might spend a day in Campbell County and knock on 50 doors. Yeah. Whereas up in Nova, you get a couple apartment buildings, you've just talked to 200 people in a day. So, I mean, that might be a little exaggerated, but that's an example of it. So, yeah, I think it's like the number is like 3 of the counties in Nova are 60% of Virginia's population. I can't say that definitively, but I remember that being the number I heard. It's something crazy like that. I'm guessing it'd be like Albemarle, Fairfax, Richmond.
Not Loudoun. That one's a little bit more rural. As you get further to the west, that one becomes more rural.
Yeah. The further southwest you get in Virginia, the redder and redder it gets. I think there's some counties down in the southwest part of Virginia that Youngkin won by like 95% of the vote, something like that.
Yeah.
So, looking forward to 2024, this election year, we have obviously a big election year nationally. Obviously you have Trump, Biden rematch, you know, the rematch no one wanted. You have the all the Senate or a large portion of the Senate seats up for grabs.
I think Trump wanted that rematch.
Yeah, I think Trump wanted that. Biden may not know there's a rematch. You never know. But the Senate...
Somebody should tell him.
Yeah, someone should.
Before it's too late.
Yeah. Or else he's going to be stuck with 4 years again. He's not going to know what's going on. But the presidency's up for grabs. The Senate's up for grabs and is looking very favorable to Republicans. There's some Democrats in seats like Ohio and Montana and West Virginia that are very likely to flip, give us control of the Senate. And, of course, you have all 435 congressional votes for 38. I'm questioning myself. All the congressional seats, I'm blanking at the moment, but all the congressional seats are up for election. And I recently made a video where I talked about the two most important congressional seats for conservatives to hold this year. Not the most necessarily in the entire country, but the most for conservatives to hold, most important. And that would be Lauren Boebert in Colorado, who is switching districts from congressional district 3 to 4 to run there. And there's a rhino there trying to hurt her, and the Democrats are working hard to get her out. So that's one I noted. The other one would be, and I don't think this is even just like, you know, bias, I think it really is Virginia 5, our congressional district where Congressman Bob Good, shirt I'm wearing, is up for re-election this year. And notably, there's a couple big differences between here and 2022 when Bob won re-election for the first time. He's running for his third term now. And that is, it is the really big noticeable difference is that there's no convention this year. It's a primary. I'm not going to go through all the details of that again. I've explained it many times on the show, differences between convention and primary. Because of that, he's a little bit greater threat. There's a lot of outside money coming in the race, and he's running against a rhino candidate who I've also discussed at length on the show before. So what do you think of the state of the race? How do you currently see it panning out? What do you think kind of the atmosphere is? Does the other guy have a chance? Does he, do you think Congressman Good's going to win? Why do you support him? All that.
Well, I'll tell you, Adam, I've been watching that race, you know, as much as I can, and I am definitely in Congressman Good's camp. I think he's done a tremendous job for us. He's gone up to D.C. He's done exactly what he told us he would do. He's been a fighter. He really has taken on the establishment, and now he's reaping the reward, so to speak, because there's a lot of money in that swamp, and they've sent money down to a swamp creature to fight to get Bob out. So this really is a fight between we, the conservative grassroots, and the swamp. And the swamp this year is striking back. They're striking back at Bob, our Congressman Good. They want him out. And so the results of this election, I think, are going to tell a pretty big story about how strong the swamp is versus how deeply concerned the grassroots are. Now, the problem is it's a primary. Not everybody who needs to be is paying attention to a primary.
Yeah.
That can go both ways. We were talking to a friend yesterday who's moderately pays attention. She does vote in primaries. She didn't know Congressman Good even had a challenger. So, you know, that's good, no pun intended, that you know, people don't realize he's being challenged because he has done such a wonderful job. We really need him to stay in there. We really need people like Congressman Good who have been for the past 4 years fighting the fight that President Trump got started but wasn't able to complete while the White House has been occupied. So we need to get Congressman Good back in there to support what President Trump will be trying to do.
The big thing, the only thing really, that Rhino John McGuire, I'm just going to say his name, we've said on the show before, there's no harm in it. The biggest thing he's running, the only thing, is that Bob Good is a never Trumper, which, as I pointed out on social media the other day, is ironic, seeing as how Bob supported Trump after the primary in 2020. He supported him fully in 2022, and he has endorsed him in 2024. Initially, like we talked about, he wasn't with Trump. Not completely, not because he disliked Trump. He just thought there was a better candidate in the field, as did I. My studio is still decked out in that gear. But now that it's the general election, Bob's like, okay, let's go. It's time to get President Trump back in. He's completely on board with Trump now. So what do you think, is there any at all sort of merit, in your opinion, to the Bob Good doesn't like Donald Trump argument?
So it's funny you ask that, Adam, because I was chairing the Campbell County Republican Committee in 2016 when Donald Trump was running for the first time. Bob Good was on the Campbell Board of Supervisors at that time. So I was, of course, in very close contact. I sat beside Bob on the Board of Supervisors. I worked with Bob through that campaign. And if he was a never Trumper, you would think the chair of the Republican Committee would know it. There was no clue that Bob would. So all that to say, I know Congressman Good stands for the values that President Trump has promoted and pushed, and I know he's going to continue to do that.
I completely agree. And it's very obvious, as I saw someone point out the other day, very obvious that the grassroots, the people of the 5th District are very obviously on Congressman Good's side. It's just how many of those, you know, kind of moderate Republicans, so to speak, the establishment types, how many people can you sway and get over with, you know, your hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars being poured in this district to get rid of Bob. And of course, one of the downsides of it being a primary, it's there's no safeguard like there's a convention. You're not supposed to vote in a primary, Republican primary, if you're Democrat, and vice versa, but you can't actually stop them. You come in, you walk in the polls, you're good. The saving grace, as someone else pointed out to me the other day, is that this is there is a Democrat primary on the same day that there's a Republican, so they'll be in the same precinct. The people will be voting in the same precincts. They can't really go through the line twice. So that shouldn't be much of a problem this year. We've certainly seen it in years past.
Good.
However, what do you think, in your opinion, on a national scale, when you look at presidency, Senate, congressional seat, I don't know how closely you followed it, but just kind of in your gut feeling, how do you think the elections are going to shake out nationally this year?
I think nationally, conservatives are going to do well, because the left hasn't been able to help themselves. They've been pushing this, like we talked about earlier, this transgendering. They've been pushing Marxism, critical race theory. They've been really showing what they believe and what they're willing to go to the mat for. And it does not line up with what Americans believe. America was founded on biblical principles. The American Revolution was vastly different from the French Revolution. The ideas that are infiltrating through the left right now are the ideals associated with the French Revolution. You remember the French Revolution resulted in a reign of terror. It resulted in a society being flipped on its head. You came into the French Revolution with some Christian influence in France. Much of that was pushed out after the revolution. The ideals that drove the French Revolution did not take hold here in America because we had a biblical grounding. Much of that has been eroded, but we still, as a whole, hold to the values that Western civilization is built on. So people are reacting to this. They don't like what they're seeing being done. They're seeing the results to a small degree. They're seeing the results being carried out and perpetrated against our children. And most Americans aren't going to tolerate that.
I agree. Now, we talked about the demographics shift in Virginia. So next year, obviously, last year's 2023, Virginia has off-year elections. They in New Jersey are the only state, or we in New Jersey, I should say. So next year, Youngkin's term ends. He cannot run again because Virginia governors can serve up to two terms, but they can't serve consecutively. Again, the only state like that. So there will be no incumbent. There never is. Meaning we'll have governorship up next year. We'll have House of Delegates up next year. I don't think there's state Senate seats next year.
No.
Okay, I didn't think so, because, yeah, they're all at once, 4 years. Okay, but governorship up, lieutenant governor, attorney general, everything that was up in 2021, including House of Delegates, because those are two-year terms, up again, 2025. Statewide races, there's varying opinions on those. We don't need to get into all that. I personally think Republicans probably aren't going to fare great. They don't usually in two consecutive elections in Virginia, but I digress. How do you think the biggest hope for Republicans in Virginia is that we reclaim the House of Delegates, which is where you ran. It's closest to home for you. And that way, again, like you were talking about, that even that one vote majority can stall the Democrats' agenda.
Yeah.
What do you think currently are our chances of doing that in 2025, being as we only need to flip one seat to tie it?
I think our chances are good. And a lot of that's going to depend on the presidential election, because like you said, it's hard to win. It's hard for one particular party in Virginia to win in two consecutive years. But we are so close, and what some of the things that the Democrats are in the House are pushing, we're going to see a couple of constitutional amendments coming out from them next year. They're certainly working hard to stifle our Second Amendment rights, but they're in particular coming after our children again. You know, like we've been talking about, but also on the abortion front. So there's an amendment that was put in this year. They withdrew it, but we can expect it to come back next year, that in essence allows a baby to be killed at any point, even after birth. And as long as we can let the public know about that, as long as the public can understand the ramifications of a constitutional amendment like that, and as long as the public knows who's behind that, who's putting that out, that the Democrats are behind this, that they advocate for this, as long as the public understands what it is the Democrats are advocating for, the Democrats are going to lose. Because Virginians are not going to put up with a party that wants to allow for a baby to be held and then killed. So I think we're going to see, hopefully, them continue to push as hard as they have been. And I think they're going to push the envelope just too far.
And we'll have to see if the frog in boiling water analogy comes to play. You know, you start it, you can kill babies at 6 weeks, then 12, then 15, then 25, and then it's fine. You know, kill them whenever. And then we're starting to see the whole, you know, the medical assistance in suicide, and dying. And so, he's 85, he's 80, he's 75, he's 70. So we're eventually all going to be dead if it was up to the Democrats. Michael Knowles has prudently pointed out before that if you think about it, if you look at it real hard, all the Democrats' policies come around to making life worse if you have to live, and usually just come around to less people.
Yeah, yeah. The value of human life is not there for the Democrats. they really do, because all of this ties in together. They see us, they see humanity as the problem. There's too much of a worship, I'm going to say, of the earth. Yep. We're to be stewards of the earth. We're to use the earth. But they see it that as we steward the earth and as we care for the earth, that we somehow are the problem. And that somehow humanity is to blame for this change in global temperatures, which, of course, history shows temperatures rise, temperatures fall. Yep. But they're using that to try to make life harder for us, to make it more difficult for us to heat our homes, to travel, just to, for daily necessities. So they're going to continue to push those sorts of things. We're going to continue to hold the standard that life has value, that one of the goals of the state should be to make life better, not worse. And I think the voters are going to see that.
Yeah. The first two chapters of Genesis make it abundantly clear the earth was created for the pleasure and, you know, for the good of humans. Well, to basically boiling it down, but humans are to steward the earth in return. You know, but it's not vice versa, where humans were put on earth, you know, God created the earth and that was his goal. And like, okay, you humans go on there just to make sure everything stays fine. Obviously, that wasn't the case. And I'm simplifying it majorly, obviously, yeah. But that's basically the case. Need to start to wrap up here. So basically, again, really big elections coming up this year. And as you point out, it's so cliche, but your vote really does matter. It's not, like you mentioned, those votes, 1,800 votes between five House and Delegates districts. You have, locally here, we had a school board candidate. So win a very contested race. It was the Republican running against a long-term incumbent on the school board, like 20-year incumbent, and another supposed Republican on the school board. And despite having half her votes taken away from the fake Republican, the real Republican still beat the incumbent, but it was by 11 votes, I believe was the final count after a recount. It was originally 9, and it was 11 votes is what she won by. We had another candidate, two Republicans running against each other, kind of a weird year, no Democrat. But the guy I was polling for, the more conservative guy, in my opinion, lost by 53 votes. I mean, it's really tight margins. So as we go into, yes, general election in November, but especially in June in Virginia and across the country, really big primaries. West Virginia is an example. Jim Justice versus Alex Mooney. Whichever one of those wins that district, that state, excuse me, whichever one of those guys wins, they're going to win West Virginia. Because the only prayer the Democrats had of keeping that one West Virginia Senate seat blue was Joe Manchin running again, and he's not. So whichever one of them wins that, Alex Mooney, seemingly the far more conservative one than Justice, whichever one wins, they're going to be our next senator from West Virginia, and that pretty much gets us back to a 50-50 tie in the Senate already. Primaries matter. Obviously, general elections matter. Primaries matter a lot. So as we go into both seasons, what's your message to voters?
I would remind voters that a vote in a primary is worth so much more than a vote in the general. Because yes, when you get to the general, the candidate's already been chosen. At a primary, you have a much more concentrated vote. Your vote weighs more, and because there's less people voting. And you're choosing what type of candidate your party is going to put on the ballot. So in essence, you're choosing at that point who you're going to get to vote for in November.
Yeah. In Virginia, that'll be the last thing I say before we head out, but in Virginia, for example, we have our Senate primary this year. June 18th, we're selecting our candidate to hopefully oust Tim Kaine in the general election. But the turnout in primaries, it depends on the year, but it can be so low. What you said, your vote really does matter so much. For instance, I don't know the exact number, obviously, but our Senate candidate, remember, Virginia is about 7 to 8 million people. Close to half of those, we'll call it 45% roughly, are Republicans, even if they're not registered. Virginia doesn't have party registration, obviously, but we'll say 45% are Republicans. We might have, of those 3 to 4 million Republicans, we might have 500,000 people that end up selecting our Senate nominee. Not a lot of people vote in primaries. So you're right. Really does matter. Your votes really do. So as we wrap up, you have anything else you want to say?
Just wanted to say, pay attention to these primaries, because this is where it happens. This is where We choose who goes on that ballot for November, and we need to have our people choosing the better of the choices.
I completely agree. Thank you,
Delegate Thank you.
Now Delegate Zara.
It's always fun to come on the show with you, Adam.
It is. Yes. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Yes. Always a good time. Sounds good to be able to now say Delegate Zara will be reelecting you next year, and hopefully we have a good year for Republicans as a whole. Thank you, folks, for watching. This has been Fight and Revive. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Some end cards will be popping up in a moment. In the outro screen, you'll get to move on to another video, should you so choose. Thank you for watching.
Thank you so much for watching this episode of Fight and Revive with Adam Boyer. We're already being shadow banned on YouTube. So, if you would like this specific video and then subscribe to the channel, that would be greatly appreciated and help us reach more people. Thank you for watching.